just to tell you, this presentation is kind of a mishmash of a lot of what we give to the kids in the public schools, not the Christian schools, because we have in the Christian schools or Christian youth groups, we add all the good Christian stuff. So this is secular, but the part with the parents, some of it's Christian because we're in front of Christians, okay? At least I think so, or I hope so. Or no, I don't hope so. Some of you are, maybe not even be. Doesn't matter if you are or not. Okay, so I'm Fran. That's Amber. I actually started Beacon of Light. I just want to start with this because I love this. Those of you that were at church know the answer when we were up there. But so many adults do not know the answer to this. It is not the media. It is not their friends. It is you guys. Okay? Absolutely true. It's parents. So we like to say have expectations for your kiddos, to communicate with them on a regular basis. I need my glasses or I can't see well enough. Thanks. I like set the bar high. Be proactive. There we go. Become educated, which is what you guys are doing here tonight. Yay. A lot of people talk about the sex talk. Like, we haven't had the sex talk yet. The sex talk should be completely gone from your vocabulary. You want to have multiple talks on a regular basis at all ages, okay? Age appropriate, of course. I love the joke of the kid that says, where'd I come from? And the parents go this big, long, and he goes, okay, well, Joey at school came from Michigan. I just wanted to know where I came from. So, again, see what they're talking about. So this is my other kind of pet peeve. I've been doing this for 20 years in the public schools, and I have heard from so many students that share things with me that their parent did. Like, my mom's had 4 abortions, stuff like that. Okay, I really believe that honesty is a good thing with your kids, but there's such a thing as too much information. Your kids can't see if stuff like this has happened to you, or even if you had, 5 sexual partners or whatever, before you got married. Your kids can't see like all the crap you may have gone through because of your not good decisions. Okay, they just see, oh, you're okay now, so I can do this too, kind of thing. Does that make sense? Okay, so TMI, don't go there. Equip your kids for the world they're going to grow up in. I Christian schools are great, but I'm a really big advocate of public schools as well. Public schools need the light. They do. They need the kids to be there and be a light. So just throwing that out there. Okay, so Beacon of Light was actually started in 1998. I used to be the director of a crisis pregnancy center in Huntington. And while I was there, I counseled hundreds and hundreds of girls and sometimes boyfriends, and I saw so much pain, unwanted pregnancies, teen moms, teen dads, abortions, teen parents, sexually transmitted diseases, a lot of emotional pain. So God led me like really strongly to start something in the prevention area. So that's how Beacon of Light actually got started. Okay, so this is one of the first slides that we show the students. This is directly from the Center for Disease Control. So as you can see, 20 million new cases of sexually transmitted infections every single year in the United States. This just rose from 19 million this past summer. Epidemic seriously going on here. And half of these STIs or STDs, because you can use them interchangeably, are to young people. All right, and there's a lot of reasons for that, which I'm going to share with you. It's the same thing as STD. I said that, you just missed it. Yeah, you can use them. You can use them interchangeably. Yes, sexually transmitted infection, sexually transmitted disease. So about 2,000 teen girls a day in this country become pregnant, and about a third of those girls have abortions. So that's what's going on right now. I have been to probably 9 medical conferences put on by the Medical Institute for Sexual Health. These are all doctors that specialize in teens and sex, okay, and the CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. All of the information in this PowerPoint for the kids, for you, for all of the above, comes from these very, very reliable sources. I tell the kids, you can get all kinds of information online. Does that mean it's right information? negative, right? So you need to go to a good source. And these are two fantastic sources. Has anybody heard of the Medical Institute for Sexual Health? Anybody? Okay, so they're based out of Austin, Texas. They were on Focus on the Family like a while ago. Joe McElhaney was a very, very successful OBGYN in Texas, and he was seeing more and more young women come through his practice with infertility issues. And after a lot of research, he realized the connection between sexually transmitted infections and infertility. So he left his very lucrative practice to start the Medical Institute for Sexual Health. So these are all physicians that do research on specifically teens and sex, but it, you know, goes beyond that. So this is a medical fact that I share with the students. Waiting for sex till you're older is both physically and emotionally healthier for you, for a whole lot of reasons, and this is not an opinion, okay? There's definitely good news going on. The CDC in January of 2017 or 2018 came out with a 150-page report. The CDC, you guys, this is, you know, liberal city, with this 150-page report about why teens and sex are a very bad idea. I'm like, yay, I've been teaching it since 1998, but I'm so glad you're on board now. So this is from them. Teens and sex are a risky combination, first of all, and this is not in any particular order. They have a higher risk of getting sexually transmitted infections and diseases just because of their age. Bodies aren't fully developed yet. Immune systems aren't fully developed yet. And that doesn't happen until early 20s, okay? Secondly, girls have very healthy, fertile eggs. You guys all know this, but the kids don't necessarily. And guys have Michael Phelps sperm, you know, Olympic gold medal swimmers, very fast, and they have one goal in life, and that's to get to the egg. If they don't, they die, and that's pretty good motivation. So much easier for a young person to get pregnant than it is for, you know, 35 or 40-year-old. Reason number three why teens and sex are a bad idea is higher use of alcohol and drugs. They don't always go hand-in-hand with drinking and doing drugs, sex, I mean, but often. I've had so many students over the years tell me, you know, in writing or in person, that they would not have had sex for the first time if they weren't, you know, drunk or on drugs. So that's a huge reality. Higher risk of depression. They've done a lot of studies and have found that teenagers that are having sex have much higher risks of depression and even suicide. And this, I think, has especially to do with the breakups, which always happen when you're a teenager. Multiple partners is the fifth reason, and there might be others, but I think these are the five biggies. In general, the younger a person is when they start having sex, the more partners they're going to have, because usually once a person starts having sex, they usually continue having sex. What changes is who they're having sex with. The partners change. Average age for marriage in the United States is 26 for girls and 29 for guys, which is a lot of years away from where they are when I see them in high school and sometimes junior high. Half the teen relationships break up in less than 6 months. The other half that lasts longer than 6 months might last a year or two, but very few teen relationships these days stay together. Very different than when our like great-grandparents were doing this deal. So the benefit of waiting till they're older, preferably 21, preferably till they're married, is fewer sexual partners. I love this. If a young person can wait to have sex for the very first time until they're just 21 years old, the average number of sexual partners in their whole life is between 1 and 3 people. Okay, these are averages. Look how this changes if students start having sex between 14 and 18. So 8 to 15, I tell them to remember that number because we're going to use it in a little bit. But these numbers could be a whole lot lower, of course. They could also be a whole lot higher. I tell them about a guy that I dated who was a helicopter pilot in the Marines. He was a captain. So he flew helicopters, and he rode a Ducati motorcycle. Like, seriously, be still my heart. Two of my favorite things, motorcycles and flying. And he was a hunk, I have to say. But he was 33 years old. Now, this was a few years ago. He was 33. He was younger than me, but that's beside the point. He was 33 years old, and he told me when we first started dating that he'd had sex with over 100 women. I was not 101 or whatever. And when we got further talking about it, he told me that he started having sex when he was 13. And I tell the kids this because they're all like, you know, 100, oh, my gosh. And And I say, you guys, think about it. That was 20 years of him having sex, okay, 13 to 33. When I did the math, that wasn't like five women a weekend or five women even a month. That was five women a year. But over 20 years, that's 100. Now, he said more than 100, but I just took 100. So anyway, that's how the numbers can grow. They're better off to wait. Oh, yeah. Yeah. He wasn't interested in sex anymore. That was how it all came up. And I was like, okay, something's wrong with this picture. This guy's a total babe. He's 33 years old. He should be wanting sex. He said he didn't care about it anymore. Just didn't matter to him. It's because he misused it so badly. I tell the kids, if I love ice cream. If you had ice cream every day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and that's all you had, ice cream, you would want a steak or whatever, you know? So again, misuse something when it's misused. You know what I mean? Anyway, so I want the kids to know towards the beginning that sex is a very wonderful thing. I don't want any of them leaving thinking sex is bad. Sex is great. Obviously, it's a gift from God, right? But I tell them within the right context. What is the right context for sex? Well, we as believers believe it's one man with one woman for life. That's the way God, you know, planned it. In the presentation, because of all the new crap stuff that we have to do, right? I say one person with one person for life instead of one man and one woman, okay? Got to do it. So there you go. That's the ideal. I say, if you think about this just for a minute, if we would have used sex this way from the very beginning of history, one person with one person for life, we would have no sexually transmitted infections or diseases. We are in the situation that we're in today, 20 million new cases every year, because we have misused sex so badly. And I tell them, it's not you guys. You know, most of you are too young to have affected any of this. It's people that are a lot older than you that have put us as a society in a very bad situation. So because of STIs, I tell them, you know, waiting is the only 100% safe choice. Things have really changed, people. 50 years ago, there were only a few common STIs, and most of them were curable. And none of them were death unless you really, like, waited too long, like syphilis, to get it fixed. Today, there's about 27 with hundreds of strains. Many of them aren't curable, and some of them can even kill you. So that's what's changed in just such a short time. Now, I don't have any gross pictures, not for you guys, not for them. They gross me out. So these are all STIs under the microscope. And I tell them, you know, some of these are kind of pretty under the microscope. Not so pretty on your junk, if you can even see them, okay? But so what happened? How do we go from a couple curable ones to the mess that we're in today? Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the sexual revolution, the whole hippie generation, sex, drugs, rock and roll, very colorful buses. And you're just going to have to imagine, because in the classrooms right now, I have CCR blaring, okay? Clearance, Clearwater Revival, yeah. but yeah, and colorful buses.
Recently, it's been Forrest Gump.
I know. And sometimes I like to say, "Oh, and isn't that Mr. Dreyfus on the top of the bus?" The other teacher. But in reality, most of the teachers are too young for this now these days. So this was a time period when many people were having sex with many people. They called it free love. You know, it was during the Vietnam War, and the biggest phrase back then was peace, make love, not war. a lot of reasons why teens want to have sex. The media makes it look like, in most ways, that it's so common. Everybody's doing it. They're kind of a freak of nature if they're not doing it. Wait, what? You've been out with this guy for three dates and you're not having sex yet? You know, that's the kind of thing. That's what TV shows us, and movies, and even the music we listen to, full of sex. Sex sells, I tell them. What you don't see very often is the negative stuff. Peer pressure is another reason some teens are having sex, but I love to share it with them, and I love to share it with you. It's true. Everyone's not doing it. And more teens today are not having sex than are. I can't remember if this is a place where I say it or not, and it's not. Okay, we'll say it later. This is a big one for females, okay? Really big reason females have sex. Healthy esteem is really important in both sexes, but I think it's especially important in girls. So I like to say, dads, tell your daughters regularly how special and valuable they are. Because if they don't get it, you know, at home, this is sometimes what happens. Sex trafficking. Amber and I have gone to a couple things recently on sex trafficking in Orange County. Just a couple things. The majority of people involved in sex trafficking, I mean the victims, like I think it's 73% are American citizens. Okay? These are not, you know, illegals. These are not people, and it's not in the Philippines. We're talking about right here. Yeah, big time.
We watched a video of one of the prosecutors was showing videos of the pimps, and they're in jail. They've been prosecuted, and they're talking. And they're like, yep, we know how to find them. We know how to find them from their profile pictures. We know how to find them walking down the street. We know how to find them in the mall. We know how to point out the girls with low self-esteem, give them something, hook them, and then get them away. Like, we know how to do it, and this is our thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they don't go up to somebody and say, hey, do you want to be a prostitute?
Yeah.
It's completely not that at all.
The one thing that really struck me was that they go around at 3 a.m. and to bus stops, and any single girl alone, like running away from home, they'll pick them up, and that will be that's like their prime time victim. And as a Christian, one of the guys said, well, why aren't we as Christians going around at 3 a.m. and picking up these girls, you know, and helping them? But they know exactly what to do.
Yeah. Right now, there's 100 open cases of sex trafficking in Orange County right now. Yeah, it's
really
unbelievable. So anyway, okay, this is another reason I already mentioned. I've had so many students tell me that they wouldn't have had sex for the first time if they weren't drunk or on drugs. I tell them, this is my plea to all of you to stay away from drugs and alcohol. You know, you have your whole life ahead of you, I tell them, if they want to screw themselves up with drugs and alcohol. Stay away from it, you know, when they're young, high school, college even, when they're more vulnerable, susceptible to crummy stuff happening. Because I tell them, you know, you have to know this. When you're drunk or on drugs, you do things that you wouldn't do if you were thinking correctly. And they all like, yeah, you're right. So true. Okay, so this just came out in May of 2018. We literally are having an epidemic of sexually transmitted infections in California and the United States. And Amber's going to go into some detail about those. We talk about oral sex because still, I don't mention Bill Clinton anymore because they don't even know about this. But all the time I used to say, thank you, Bill Clinton, because, yeah, nobody, I don't say nobody, but it was sure wasn't like out there before Bill Clinton, right? With oral sex. No, people weren't talking about it. Kids didn't know what it was. After that happened and it was in the news all over the place, elementary kids knew about it. But anyway, some kids say yes, it is. Some say it's not. I just want them to know that you absolutely can get a sexually transmitted infection from having oral sex or any other kind of sexual activity. I always make them say the French word frottage. That just means private parts touching private parts. Okay, that can give you a sexually transmitted infection just as easily. There's a couple that are full-on skin-to-skin contact. So STIs love dark, warm, moist. Mouth, throats, private parts, that's where they grow. So these are STI facts for everyone, and we emphasize this now because we've got to make sure that the LGBT are all included, yep. So you can get an STI the very first time you have any kind of sexual activity. There's no free pass because it's your first time and you don't know what you're doing. Many people have them and don't know it and are passing them on to other people because so many of them don't show symptoms for sometimes a long time. And third, you don't get them from casual contact. So we tell them, you know, you're not going to get an STI from drinking out of somebody's Starbucks or from a toilet seat or anything, from holding hands or hugging or even kissing, very unlikely to get STI from kissing. And I say piggyback rides are safe, unless you're naked. I have to have humor with these kids because it's such a serious subject, you know, you just got to have some levity in here. Okay, so I'm going to turn it over to Amber, and she's going to talk for a little bit, and then I will be back. You want to?
I'm laughing.
You
want to
get the mic? Yeah. And you need to turn it on. Amber.
Oh, yay. It's weird that I have to be on a microphone. Can you guys
Is it on?
Is it on?
Okay. It's all about their recording. That's why we have to have it.
So fancy. Okay, so STIs, STDs, we talked about, we can use them interchangeably. They came about it just to kind of, I think, soften it, right? Like, oh, it's just an STI, right? Take the stigma out of STD, broader term, it's an infection, making it kind of normal. And it is normal now, which is really sad, but we're going to use the words interchangeably. So many of you maybe, I don't know, haven't seen this, but this really is cool. I tried to create this myself, and I found out that CDC did it, and they did a much better job than I was doing. So this is really cool.
And but do you guys know Penny Popoff from Grace? She carries this around in her pocket.
She came up to us when we were at church, and she's like, have you seen this? I was like, we have it in our PowerPoint. This is so cool. Yeah. She's like, it's just so powerful. So basically what this is showing is the purple people are making up the – well, everyone is making up the sexually active population in America, right? And the purple are just a very small percentage, 27%, right, 15 to 24, but yet represent half of the STIs. So we share with them, if you're having sex during this time, your likelihood of getting an STI are very high, okay? And then so we go through each one of them for the kids. Something I do want to point out is the infertility. Fran talked about that. That is another epidemic going on. A lot of 20, this is really squeaky, 20 and 30-year-olds aren't being able to have children. They're going to the doctor because they are can't get pregnant. They want to start a family. And what they found out is that they never got tested for STIs. So they never got tested, but they've had it inside of them. So that's how STIs work, right? There's often very no symptoms. You can look at your mouth, throat, private parts, look at your partner's mouth, throat, or private parts and not see anything. That doesn't mean that you might not have the infection and it's hurting your insides. So what happens is that when they want to start having a family, they go to the doctor and they say, well, you've had an STI and it has now hurt you inside and you can't have kids. So that is a really popular thing going on right now, which is really sad. And I just read an article about stillbirths. Stillbirths are on the rise in California because women didn't get tested. They went through their whole pregnancy, and then it ended up killing their baby on the way out because they never got tested. So gonorrhea, this is one. 70% of gonorrhea cases are to this age group, 15 to 24. Okay, gonorrhea in our lifetime will become incurable. It has been curable since the beginning of time. There's a new video on our website talking from the CDC. It's now immune to all antibiotics but one. Only one left in the United States to cure gonorrhea. Chlamydia, it's the major cause of infertility, one of them. Usually asymptomatic. 7 out of 10 girls won't know they have it, okay? And again, 63%. Is there anything I'm missing in the facts that we hit?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Usually asymptomatic, yeah. HPV, this is the most common STI in America today, okay? The most common. We just read, oh, the next one?
Okay. Yeah, you have a slide on that.
Oh, good. I want to talk about syphilis real fast then. Syphilis, only 20%. It's more prevalent in guys than girls, but syphilis has three stages. First stage, you don't see anything. If you never got tested, you would never know. Second stage, common cold. Never go to the doctor for an STI, common cold, right? Third stage, you actually see something going on. Go to the doctor, and if you're in stage three, it could be too late and it could kill you. That's syphilis. So that's what's going on there. And the immune system. I do want to talk about the immune system. Fran talked about just because they're in their 20s, right, their immune system is weaker or not all the way developed. So I try to do I'm going to set this down for a second. Like a shield. An immune system is supposed to be your shield, right, and protect you and give you a long, healthy life, right? But until you're in your 20s, your immune system looks like this. So if you're exposed, you're more likely to get it. So I go through that, right, a lot with them. Like, hey, you're more exposed because your immune system. It's very squeaky. HPV. There's currently 80 million people in America. It's 1 in 4 people in America have a strain of HPV. That's crazy, okay? And 74% are to our kids' age group. There's many different strains. We used to say 100 different strains. I just saw on the California Department of Health, there's 170 strains, okay? And several of them cause cancer. For women, it causes cervical cancer. And for men, it can cause penile or head and neck cancer. Okay, and they can cause genital warts as well. There is the vaccine. Now, I'm currently going through this with my 12-year-old, and my doctor is pushing me hard to get it, and I am pushing hard back. might have to change doctors. I just decided today. But the HPV, I do want to talk about what the vaccine is, okay? And that's just my opinion. But the HPV vaccine protects against 6 of the strains that are known to cause cancer, okay? That's what the vaccine is for. Now, granted, there is 170 strains too. So we tell the kids, can't go have that free love, right, that we talked about earlier because you got a shot. Okay, it only is 6 out of the hundreds of strains, and that's only one of the 27 different STIs. So we want them to make sure if they've gotten the shot, like, hey, we can, you know, just go out and do whatever. That's just not the case. HIV, I talk a lot about HIV being that immune system, right? HIV breaks down your immune system so far that eventually it's called AIDS, and that breaks down your immune system so far. And AIDS doesn't kill you. The common cold kills you because it breaks down that immune system. And the number one way of contracting HIV, and we have to talk about this, and I'll discuss a little bit why, and I'm sorry it's a little uncomfortable with adults especially, but anal sex is the number one way, okay, of contracting HIV. And we describe why, okay? The reason why is that the tissue is very thin. It's very permeable, which means that disease can pass in and out very easily. It tears, and there's often blood involved, okay? And that's the number one way that HIV is being passed through. I just did a presentation in my best friend's high school class and in her health class, and she got up and said, hey, I went to Calvary Chapel High School, and there, all of my friends, when I went to high school, were doing that and saying that they were virgins and saying that they were safe. It's very important that we know that that is still sex, and it can cause infection and death. Other ways are dirty needles. Intercourse is very low, and the rest are very low on that. But the fastest growing group, not the biggest group having, fastest growing group contracting HIV today, teens and women. We make them raise their hands. If you're a teen in the class, everyone has to raise their hand. Keep your hand up. Girls, raise your hand. They have two hands up. Fastest growing group. Now, we talked a lot about the media, right? You can't just take what the media says as being true. Teen Vogue put out an article. You could Google it, parents, if you like. Teen Vogue, anal sex. It's a whole article about why and how you should have anal sex. They are pushing
Teen
that.
Vogue.
Teen Vogue. Pushing it on our children. Parents wrote in and said, take this down. What are you doing? And they wrote back, we're educating the youth. You should thank us. So I tell the kids, that's the number one way of contracting. You're the fastest growing group. And who does Teen Vogue market to? And they're like, us. So, and I said that. I have teen girls. That makes me upset. It should make you upset. Maybe not now, but later, right? It's very important where you get your information, okay? And that should make you guys really upset too. So how does it spread? I talked about you can't see it, right? So if you can't see it on yourself, you can't see it on your partner, you might be okay. But that's just... not the case, okay? So we used to show this slide before the new law came out. And so this shows everyone has had sex with two people. Okay, it goes and goes. Now, what I didn't talk about was genital herpes. I didn't break that down. I don't know why. Genital herpes in the United States, 1 in 6 people have genital herpes. In California, does anyone want to guess? 1 in? Give me a number.
4. Yep.
1 in 4 have genital herpes. And so genital herpes, I do want to break that down because I passed the slide. But genital herpes is painful blisters that are on your mouth, throat, private parts. Okay, and what happens is you have the disease inside of you for a long time, and then you'll have your first outbreak. You'll know something's wrong because it's painful. You'll go to the doctor, and you'll have that. You'll have this virus the rest of your life. There's no cure for genital herpes. Okay. But you can take medicine to suppress the outbreaks, which means not have as many outbreaks. But there is just a case in the news of you can sue someone for giving you genital herpes even if they didn't have any symptoms, okay? So it's giving you something even though there's no symptoms on there. I talk about my same best friend, but I didn't talk about that to her kids. It's hot up here, by the way. It's freezing outside. She was married. Her husband left her, and she went out and had 2 flings. Right, blown off steam. She's in her 30s, had 2 flings. Woke up one day, called me and said, I'm paralyzed, I'm sure of it, my leg. Went to the doctor, she had got genital herpes from one of those 2 guys. So she has it for the rest of her life, takes medicine. And she still is single and goes on dates. And I explain this. Okay, there's an emotional side to this, right? That she has to then disclose at some point, right, in her date that, 1, I'm not going to have sex till I'm married again. 2, I have genital herpes, and if we have sex, I'm going to give it to you. right? So the first time that we walked through this, okay, it's date four. We decided she was going to tell him. She texted me and she was like, we're all good. Like he said, he thanks for being honest with me. Think about it. 1 in 4 people have it, right? Thanks for being honest with me. Seemed like a great girl. I can't wait to get to continue to know you. Never returned a phone call or a text again. And that's continually. And she says, I mean, the way that people look at me when I tell them is like I'm some alien, but yet 1 in 4 people have it. So there's this emotional side to it too, because we don't feel like the pictures scare the kids enough. We want them to really be thinking about the emotional side effects of it as well. So we ask, if all these people had sex with just 2 people, how many people in America have genital herpes? 1 in 6. 4.
4 in California.
1 in 4 in California. So we say that this person has genital herpes. If I have sex for the first time, am I exposing myself to genital herpes? Yes or no? I'm going to make it interactive now. You guys can't fall asleep on me. Yes, yes, you're exposed to that, and we'll explain why. So this is what we have to show now, gingerbread people. To be able to be in the public schools, this is what we have to show. Just want to let you know. Okay, so I'm going to explain it with my piece of gum analogy. Okay, so I'm going to say I went to the Willy Wonka Chocolate Factory, and I got this really rad piece of gum, and it changes flavor every time a new person has it, and I want to share it with you. So I'm going to share it with you, and you guys are going to share it, and all of you guys have a chew on this gum. Okay, but what I forgot to tell you is that I'm sick today, but you can't tell. Today I have the flu, the start of the flu. I have it inside of me, and it's starting. Tomorrow I'm going to wake up with 104 temperature and be sick. Okay, everyone's going to stay away from me tomorrow, but today I'm actually contagious as well. Okay, so once it's gone around, are you all exposed to my flu? Yeah, you're not all going to get it because of different immune systems, but some of you will, but you're all exposed to it. Does that make sense? So that's how it goes. The former Surgeon General, he's the doctor over the whole United States, he says that when you have sex with someone, it is like you're having sex with everyone they have had sex with in the last 10 years, and everyone they and their partners have had sex with in the last 10 years. Yeah.
So it's this former U.S. Surgeon General. And
yeah.
I'm just curious, did he say that when he was the Surgeon General, or did he say it when he was past his Surgeon Generalship?
Oh, that's a good question. All I know is this has been in my PowerPoint presentation pretty much since the beginning.
You would hope that he would say it when he had the authority to say it.
Yeah. Good. Well, yay for him. So this is what it looks like, exponential math. And I say you want to do this with your money, okay? When you get a job, make your bank, make your money, make money fast. You don't want to do it with your body. Do you guys remember, partner-wise, if you start having sex at 14 to 18, how many partners you'll have? Do you remember that number? 8 to 15. So if I've had sex with 8 people, this is saying I've had sex with 8 people, my partner has had sex with 8 people, and all of our partners have had sex with 8 people. Chances slim to none. Some will be up here. Some will be down here. Some will be Ducati dude, right? We try to get his number, and I don't think the calculator broke. So how many bodies have we exposed ourselves to if we've had sex with 8 partners?
255.
Yeah, and what about 10? 1,023. And then break up, have a one-night stand, and marry number 12. How many bodies have I exposed myself to? Yeah, so what are the chances we've exposed ourselves to something with the epidemic we're in, right? Very high, very high. So what about condoms, right? Like, I'll just wear a condom. It'll be fine, right? That's just not the case. And we blurb this for them all day long. I know. And then I'm like, sorry, but this is the real facts. So facts were done.
Research.
Research. Sorry. Research was done about condoms and what's going on with condoms. Why are we in this STI epidemic, right? And this is what they found. If you use a condom every single time you have sex and you're exposed to HIV, that exposure rate, you reduce your risk by 85%, okay? That's great, but still it leaves you a 15% chance of contracting something, and that is only oral and vaginal sex, not anal sex. If it's anal sex, it's way, way, way lower, okay? And for all those other ones, gonorrhea, syphilis, chlamydia, herpes, all those other ones, if you use a condom every single time you have sex, the CDC says it offers some protection. They used to say 50%. We used to say a coin toss when I started, but now we just can say some because they took it down. And I do want to say, Fran just sent me, I'm going to share. Fran just sent me from the Consumer Reports.
Mm-hmm.
did a private study on condoms, 23 different condoms, and the worst one of the 23 was Planned Parenthood's, what they give out.
Big surprise.
Very upsetting. Very upsetting. I mean, all of it's upsetting, but it's very upsetting. They're passing out free condoms, but they're the worst, and they have holes, and it's gross.
Like, what I've heard before,
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
The only exception really is syphilis. One female to eight guys get syphilis, but for everything else, it's way more on the girls. I say, girls, we get the short end of the stick. No pun intended.
You're so funny.
I'm so bad.
Let's talk about why. Let's break down the lies, right? That's like our favorite thing to do. That's what we do. We break down this lie of what the media says and just have them think about it. And they know it's truth because it makes sense, right? Everything else seems jumbled, but this just makes sense. Why? It doesn't cover the whole area, right? Just skin to skin, the word frottage, right? Skin to skin. It doesn't cover the whole area. They can break during sex. They can slip off. And you have to use it for all types of sex. Okay, to get those some protection. Better than nothing, but some protection, okay? And people don't use them all the time. Studies show that teens that are having sex are not using condoms. So people, you have to use them all the time. You have to use them correctly. There's a whole lot of wrong ways. There's one right way to use them. Yeah, that's on there twice, huh? So teens and babies, for this, birth control. Birth control, just because we talked about the eggs were very fertile, right? Fran talked about it. This is the time that back in the day, our bodies were reproducing, right? In our teens and 20s. At 35, it's, what is it called? Geriatric pregnancy, right? I explained that to them, and they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, that means old person pregnancy at 35, right? This is the time it is. So if you're using the pill, we tell them, and if I'm using the pill, you're more likely to get pregnant than me, right? Just because of your age. What else? But this is good news. Teen pregnancy has fallen, which is great. And I will tell you, I used to work at a crisis pregnancy center also. And our average patient for crisis pregnancy was 20s and 30s. So that is changing. But teen girls with boyfriends 3 years or older are more likely to get pregnant, just statistically. Was there a question? No? Okay. The hormone birth controls do not protect against STIs. We make sure they know that, okay? And if you're only using condoms to prevent pregnancy, that has the highest rate of pregnancy. 1 in 5 couples just using condoms will get pregnant.
In the first 6 months.
Yeah. It is really hot up here. I'm like.
It is hot.
Okay. So with that to be said, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know there was going to be an answer. I just wanted to complain, I guess. So, yeah, I just want to say it out loud and just express what's going on. Okay, so how many teen girls a day get pregnant? Do you remember? Fran's first slide. 2,000 teen girls a day get pregnant in the United States. This is how it breaks down. Okay? 30% choose to have abortions, 65% choose to parent, and 5% choose to adopt. Are these easy options? I asked the girls and the guys, are they easy? All of them say no. None of these are easy, okay? And what they don't talk about is abortion consequences, okay? Abortion is sold as a quick fix. Okay, that's just not the case. 30 to 40% of women will have emotional or will have physical complications, which I explain. Your body won't work the same way from before the abortion versus after the abortion. And 80% of women will have emotional complications. It's a PTSD form of it's called post-abortion stress syndrome. And I personally counsel women through a 10-week course. It's a Bible study, but I share with them it's a 10-week course of women who have had abortions who want counseling. My average age of counseling is 50 to 65, and they had abortions in their teens and 20s. So that's how long it could take, you know, to get there. I have had younger, but the difference between the sexes, okay, nothing to do with gender, we have to say, just observation. Guys are very visual, okay? It doesn't take much to be kind of ready to go and ready to have sex. We talk about attire, which I haven't been talking about, but I need to really keep adding that in. But attire, girls, you have to think about if guys are very visual, what you're wearing can really be sparking that. And not that it's anything is ever your fault, but just seeing, just notice, okay, what you're wearing and what kind of attention you're attracting from that.
Okay? And can I say my line? when you I sure get can. To do this. Usually in the public schools, Amber's doing this part. But whenever I do it, I always say,
go ahead.
Girls, when you dress really sexy, provocatively, it makes it really hard for the guys. And I mean that literally.
And it takes a few minutes. And then they're like,
and then they
ah!
go, ah!
Yeah,
but it's a true statement. It's funny, but it's also very true. That's why porn is so much more.
Okay, I get to talk about porn next.
Okay, sorry.
I'm so excited. Okay. I know. My mom watched my presentation, and I was like, yay, it's my favorite part. And after, she goes, did you have to say that that was your favorite part? Like, up on the stage? And I was like, yeah, it is. And she's like, okay. A little weird. I was like, yeah, okay. All right. Yeah, a little weird, Amber. Yeah. Well, anyways.
She's passionate about the negative side of it, not that.
I know. And someone was like, oh, it's the porn girl. I was like, oh, no. No, that's not happening. Yeah, you're the sex lady. I'm the porn girl. Super great. Okay, so for girls, it's harder to become, it's easier when you're physical to become emotionally attached, okay, for girls. That's just part of who we are. Okay. Pornography. I love breaking down this lie of pornography. Read this out loud for me because I think it's powerful.
97 billion.
Someone in the industry of making $97 billion, do they care about you? No. Do they care about your future?
No.
No. What do they care about?
Money.
Money. And they found out that taping unrealistic sex scenes makes a lot of money. Okay. And that's what they care about. Okay. And so I'm here to break it down that it's not real. And what's happening is the average age of exposure is 12 in the United States. 12 to see pornography. There's clickbait. We can talk all day long about this. But I actually have the most slides on this. Favorite. But it fuels sex trafficking also. But 12 is the average age of exposure now. Okay, because of our cell phones and because of YouTube and because of clickbait, which is on the side. This happened to my daughter at 6, by the way, and it wasn't porn, it was French kissing, but when I saw it, she knew it was wrong, and she shut her computer, and I was like, what's going on? And my husband saw it, and I freaked out, and he, like, went back, and she watched a One Direction video and clicked on the side, and it just kept going and going and going, do you know? And that's how easy it is to see pornography, okay? So that really hard statistic is 64% of kids are watching pornography at least weekly. Okay. Because I explain, when you first are exposed to pornography, you feel like that is what sex is. Okay. And it feels good and it releases endorphins. Okay. And when you go and you actually have your first sexual encounter, you're disappointed because it doesn't look that way because you think that that's what sex really is, but that's not, right? And so this was on the cover of Time magazine in 2016, about 20 and 30-year-old guys who had erectile dysfunction. They could not get it up for their partner because they were addicted to pornography. Okay, so we talk about the real live addiction. Okay, it is addicting as drinking, doing drugs, smoking. It's addicting. Okay, pornography is. And the reason why, and this is so small, but I just like talking about it, the dopamine that's released when you see it makes your body think that it's normal. And the health classes that we speak in, they're talking about addiction, so we really parallel it with that, releases that. And the next time you watch it, it releases a little bit less, so you keep watching to get that original high that you felt, and you keep watching it. And we talk about what is addiction, right, where you once controlled it, but now it controls you. So where you once went and just, oh, yeah, I want to turn it on, to now you're finding places to be alone to turn it on. Now it controls you, okay? So that's really important for them to know. There is a thing called No Porn November, I'm sorry, this is a little weird. A kid told me in high school. It's called No Nut November. This is a real thing that all the kids know about, by the way. No Nut November. And this guy wrote to us in November. It was like the third week. We were at a high school in Huntington. And he wrote, thank you so much for talking about porn. I did the challenge of not watching porn in November. And I've realized now after your presentation that I have been nicer to my family, playing better in my sports, and sleeping better. I won't watch porn anymore. I've realized it's really affected my life, right? That's just a freshman in high school guy. We have some guys that write, no more porn, thank you. Like, that's their thing. We're like, okay, well, that's good. At least we're sick in there. This is a great website for you. Resources, fightthenewdrug.org. I love this website. I'm into it. There's videos. We give the kids extra credit on it. I'm like, you don't even have to read. You can watch the videos. But it talks about your brain, talks about the addiction, talks about relationships. We talked about that. And it's really affecting our society with human trafficking. It's like number one gateway for human trafficking, okay? And for sexual abuse, one kid wrote to me in, I think it was in November. He wrote and said, hey, have you seen the Ted Bundy story? You should look it up. So I was like, oh. So I looked it up. Ted Bundy attributes his whole killing spree on his last interview with James Dobson.
He said,
I was a normal boy, and I saw pornography in the grocery store, and I started going, and it wasn't enough, and I had to do it. And he said, I should be killed. I am a danger to society, but I was normal before pornography, and I did that. It pushes all the limit. I think it's something like up to 90% of cops say at sexual crime scenes, porn is either playing or out. It is very bad.
And we emphasize to the kids that if you watch porn, this does not mean you're going to become
a
sexual offender. But almost every single sexual offender, we're talking rapists and pedophiles, are addicted to hardcore and
have admitted to being addicted.
Yeah. So
this is a great they have on here. It's a free app for kids under the it's free app for under 18, I believe.
I think it is. Called Fortify.
Fortify. It helps you become unaddicted. Really great. Sexual abuse, saddest part of the presentation. I cry a little bit every time when I look around the room. 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will be sexually abused by the time they're 18. Okay. We believe pornography has a lot to do with it. We just talked about that. What does that say?
Oh, yeah. The 100 open cases.
Yeah. 80% of sexual abuse, sorry, this is a little different than what I'm used to. 80% of sexual abuse is committed by someone that we know. Okay, boyfriend, friends, something, someone that we know. We don't put this in for our kids, okay? But I want you guys to really, really look at this. These are signs of abuse, okay? And I pray that this is never our kids. But fearful behavior, nightmares, depression, abdominal pain, bedwetting, genital pain, bleeding, attempts to run away, extreme sexual behavior, and STIs. So those are the top things of sexual abuse, to just be praying over our kids and their safety. We tell them that it's never, ever, ever your fault if this has happened to you. And we've had a few comments, even when we did a 2-day, someone wrote in and said, hey, if I'm being abused in my home, what does that mean? You know? And the answer is you'll be taken, but it's not safe where you're at. Right? It is never your fault. It's so important to get away from the situation, to tell someone, tell your parents. We really stress that. If you can't tell your parents, tell a trusted teacher. Get away and report it. It's really important because chances are you're not the first person and you won't be the last person. It's really important to do that. Okay, Fran's story. You can get on the hot box up there.
That's yours.
Oh, yeah.
My first serious relationship was after high school. And we dated for 5 years. I was a Christian because I became a Christian when I was a sophomore, junior in high school, through Young Life. And the guy I dated for 5 years was a Christian. And so we had made the commitment that we were never going to have sex till we got married. And we never did. But he ended up going to graduate school in another state, and he met someone else. So that was the end of our relationship after 5 years. Then I moved to California. I'll blame it on California. Not really. And I'm kidding. But I met a guy shortly after I got here and fell in love. Not a Christian. Christian dating 101. Don't date a non-Christian. Because I ended up falling in love with the guy. And so after we'd been together for a year, I decided I wanted to have sex with him. He wanted to pretty much after the first date, but I held out for a whole year. I knew that it was wrong. Bottom line. So I just decided to put God in the closet. I knew God was the truth. I just wanted to have sex more. So put God in the closet and started having sex with this guy. And shortly after we started having sex, we were using condoms all the time because I did not know then what I know now. And 3 months after we started having sex, I'm pregnant. I told no one but him that I was pregnant. And I tell this story to the kids, guys. This is I told nobody but him I was pregnant. He said that he really loved me and he wanted to marry me. I say, what's the next word? And but some of the kids say, but, yep, but he wasn't ready now. And he wanted me to have an abortion. I didn't want to have an abortion, but I was in love with him and I didn't want him to leave me. And I couldn't do this by myself. And not to make excuses, but honestly, truly, this was back when they were saying, oh, it's just a clump of tissues. It's not a baby. We know different now. Anyway, I did have the abortion, and I will be sorry forever that I made that choice. I tell the kids biggest mistake I've ever made in my life. I love kids, and I wanted to have a bunch, and I have none today. Had no idea that was the only time I was going to be pregnant. So he stuck around for a short time after this happened, and then he left. And I'm now just, I don't know, hurting to say the least. And I start dating, you know, a bunch of different people. And each time, you know, fall for another guy, think I'm in love, have sex, you know, the whole nine yards. And when I came to the end of this string of several guys, I came like this close to committing suicide. My self-image was so far in the gutter, and I was in so much pain from this abortion that I had told, like, no one about, except the boyfriend. The only reason, I mean the only reason, I remember it so clearly, even though it was a long time ago, I know that God did not want me to do that. So I didn't. So I turned my life back around, got back with the Lord, and yeah, so that's my story. I do. Oh, no, no. We really can't talk about God in the public schools. I mean, we have been known to do it with kids, like after class or whatever, but during the school, it's just, I don't want to take a chance, to be very honest. And honestly, I've thought about this a lot. The other thing is, if the kids knew that we were Christians, or even one of us was, it would invalidate a lot of what we say. That's the truth. Because they're like, oh, she's a Christian, you know. Right. You know, don't have to believe anything. Yeah, she has, she does. And I don't wear it all the time when I teach. But, yeah. But
Christian parents know yeah, they're Christians. Yeah, they write to us and say, we can tell you're Christians. We're praying for you. Thank you. Like, awesome. Like, we agree. Like, thank you. You know? Like,
yeah, we do get some of that. Yeah. So these are the lessons that I share with the kids that I learned. Oh, never mind. this is one of the slides I put in for you guys. This God gave me, and I love this. You know, we know as believers, he always forgives and forgets. Right out of, you know, Psalm, Pharisees is from the West. But we remember and regret. And that's pretty huge. The consequences, you know, can have lifelong effects for sure. So this is what I tell the students, what I learned. I figured out that love and sex aren't the same thing. I think a lot of females confuse love and sex. Most guys know that love and sex are very different. Some people don't need love to have sex. In general, it's usually guys, but sometimes girls too. Some guys will use love to get sex, but most females give sex to get love. And then, the other one disappeared. I also realized that I got over my longest relationship, that 5-year guy, I got over him faster and easier than even the relationships that only lasted 6 months. And I figured out why. It's because we never made that bond. And there's science to this, which I'm going to share with you in just a second. Breakups are not fun. I tell the kids, you know, there's no condom for the heart. It's cheesy, but it's true. I wish there was. So this is what science shows, and I do love this because this is newer information, like maybe 12, 13 years ago, something like that. Oh, yeah, there you go. In 2005, 2003. So we now know that there's chemicals in our brains that are released, and they help us bond and trust. Oxytocin's the same chemical that women have when they're breastfeeding to help them bond with that to the baby. It's really cool stuff. So, and they know that when you have like lots and lots of partners, these chemicals don't work as well. Okay.
What's an example for them to get? I like the paper example or the duct tape for them to get to their kids.
Okay. So, yeah, this is an example you can use if you want. I haven't said it for so long, I almost forgot it. What is it, the duct tape?
So, oxytocin and vasopressin are chemicals that literally bond and trust, right? And if you think about how cool that God made that, that bond and trust, your partner, that's so important to do, right, to have a healthy marriage. But when you use it multiple times, it loses its strength. So we talk about duct tape, right? If you put a piece of duct tape on a box, okay, it works really well. Take that same piece of duct tape off and put it on another box, another box, another box. What's eventually going to happen? It's not going to stick anymore,
yeah.
Right? And so that's a real thing that we want to give to our future partners. We want to give that to our marriage and to our future. And we talk about, I used to do a very long time ago, a blue piece of paper and a red piece of paper. Well, I used to do blue and pink, but can't do that anymore. Put it with have it glued, and when you tear it apart in front of the class, there's pieces of the blue on the pink and pink on the blue, right? You leave a piece with them, okay? And there's chemicals that you leave that are literally released in both men and women when you have sex. So it's really important.
And I can't believe I forgot that after I've said it like 5,000 times.
Yeah.
It's just been a little while. Okay, so most powerful sexual organ in our body is not below our waist, I tell the kids. It is actually our brain. It's not fully developed till mid-20s. I could go into that along, but if you want, I will later. So I encourage them to use it to make good choices because one bad decision can change everything. And then this, I make them all say out loud, very enthusiastically, it is never too late to start over, because I really, really need them to know that. Because again, about 40% of the students we're talking to have already had sex. Okay. Not junior high, I'm sure, probably not even freshmen, but by the time they're juniors and seniors, it's about 40%. Yeah, why didn't you? I wish I could have heard this 2 years ago. Yeah, we hear that a lot. So this is what I call my healthy relationship pyramid. And God gave me this like at the very beginning when I first started. My dad made my first set of blocks for me, but I've had many since then. Because even though they're wood, they still break sometimes. So I tell the kids that there's a lot of aspects to a healthy relationship. You know, shared beliefs, common interests, friendship, trust, love, communication. Time is a really big one because you can't know someone well in a short period of time. I think that's the main reason why teen relationships don't last, and I share this with the kids, because right now I say you guys are only a part of who you're going to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now. You're still growing and changing. So that's why teen relationships don't last usually. This top block represents sex, not because it's the smallest part of the relationship, but it's because I think you should add it after you have all these other things in place. And ideally, the block right before sex is the commitment of marriage. And I used to say just commitment because I thought marriage sounded too old-fashioned or moralistic. But I realized something. You can be totally committed to somebody today, and they can be totally committed to you today. But 6 months from now, one of you might not want to be in that relationship anymore. And if you're not legally married, either person can walk away anytime, no strings attached. And this is not just for teens. So I tell them, you know, when you marry somebody, that's a serious commitment. You're putting your money where your mouth is. Okay. Now, like the pyramids in Mexico and Egypt that have been there practically forever, not much can knock a pyramid down, because look at that base. I mean, it's monster huge, right? This is the strongest structure there is. Very difficult to knock a pyramid down. But what a lot of us tend to do is build backwards. Maybe sex isn't first, but it's near the beginning, you know, first month, first year even. And then we try to build a relationship on top of the physical. And this does not take a rocket surgeon, because I love mixing metaphors, to figure this out. This is not going to be a real strong structure, is it? So if your relationship looks like this, with the tablecloth, it's a little more wiggly. If your relationship looks like this with sex towards the beginning, it's going to be very easy for that relationship to fall. Because when problems come along, and they always do. So I tell them, you know, think about what you want in a relationship. I usually ask, how many of you think you might want to get married someday? What do you think the answer is? Do you think most of them want to get married someday? Yeah. Yeah. That is, it's really great. For some reason, sometimes in Irvine, it's like half. I don't know why. But everywhere else, it's almost all hands raised. It's true. And then I say, okay, so since most of you, almost all of you want to get married, how many of you are looking forward to getting divorced? And of course, they're like,
one dude is like, me.
Yeah. But for the most part, yeah, it's no. It's like, you know, obviously, hello, so. Don't you want to do as much as you can to give yourself a better shot at staying long-term happily married? So this is the quote we give them. What's 100% effective in preventing all this stuff? You know, obviously, not having sex. That's what we put up there. A slide says, not having sex. It works every time. So if they both wait, I tell them, you won't have to worry about STIs. You won't be a teen single parent. And I love this when this floats my boat. They've done studies on this. Your marriage is more likely to be successful. So I love that. According to the CDC, 60% of high school students today are not having sex. 10 years ago, 60% were having sex. So we've seen a complete flip, which is good news. But again, that means 40% still are. So we got to reach those 40. 80% of the girls regret it. The ones that did have sex, 60% of the guys regret it. This is for you guys. I don't have this up for the kids. But 87% of teens incorrectly believe that most high school students are having sex. Interesting, okay? When in reality, it's only 40. Okay, so I'm going to turn it back up to Amber.
Not everyone's doing it. Okay, cool. So my story, they get to hear. Not the God part of it, but I went to Fountain Valley High School, and as a freshman, I fell in love with a sophomore football player. I mean, like, if I think I see him till this day, like, think, like, my heart gets a little, like, okay. So fell in love, started having sex, and as a sophomore, I was pregnant, 15. I didn't want to tell anyone. I didn't want anyone to find out, okay. I just took my boyfriend and my one friend to Planned Parenthood. And I said, I can't tell anyone. I don't want to be pregnant. And they said, we have a quick fix. And I said, great, sold. So from the time that I planned the abortion and had the abortion, my boyfriend broke up with me and started dating someone else. And my friend told one person and or the whole school. The whole school found out. And everyone was talking about it. It's before social media. And the principal, with 9 weeks left of my sophomore year, said I was a distraction to the school. And it was time for me to go. So I got transferred to Marina High School with 9 weeks left of my sophomore year. I'm really broken. I'm really sad. I have no baby. I have no boyfriend. I have no friends. No trust in humanity, really. And so I fell into partying. I wanted to fill that void. So I started drinking and doing drugs, and I was that person passed out on the couch getting taken advantage of, and I dated bad guys, and I thought sex was no big deal. Okay, and so at 17, I had a knife to my wrist. My dad left our house, and I just thought it was it. And I dropped the knife, and I went to a guy friend's house. I had this really nice guy friend. He was super not cute. He was super nice, and I was only dating bad guys. And I'd show them. He used to write me love letters, and I'd be like, we are never going to be together. Like, can we just be friends? Like, what a brat, right? Anyways, we built a five-year friendship, and so his parents were really great to me. And so that night that I had a knife to my wrist, I went and they helped me get my life back together, and I tried it on my own, right? Like, stop doing drugs, stop drinking, stop having sex. Like, just start doing it on my own. and then when I kind of cleared up, I realized I should probably start dating a good guy instead of these bad guys. And so I started dating this dorky guy who's super cool, and he's so handsome. But anyways.
Now.
So, yeah. So we get married. So we start dating, and we get married, and we get pregnant with twins. And every time I get to this part, the kids are like, oh, yay. And I was like, okay. So I miscarried them. And I remember going home and thinking, and I'm just going to tell you this part, that it was my punishment from God. I remember telling God, drinking a bottle of vodka, saying, I took one of yours and you took mine. I get it. I get it. And I remember that moment so clearly. And then I got pregnant right away with my daughter, and I couldn't bond with her. I was scared to bond with her. I gave birth, and I used all my oxytocin and vasopressin and couldn't bond with her. And then I got pregnant with my second daughter, couldn't bond with her. And she got really sick. Within a few months old, she was rushed, 10 days old actually, rushed to Chalk Hospital, lived there for a while, and the doctor looked at me at one point and just said, I'll pray she doesn't die of SIDS. And I remember, this is the part I can't share inside, but I remember sitting in my garage, broken, depressed, sad, couldn't bond, didn't really want to be married anymore, didn't know what to do, my daughter's going to die, and I remember sitting in my garage asking and saying, God, if you're real, I need you. Right? And of course he showed up because he's so good. So he showed up. And so I gave my life to God that year. Someone invited me to church and I went and I gave my life. And I actually went to, I found a really cool story, but I found Horizon Pregnancy Center. They were at a church I tried one time, and there was this thing, and it was a post-abortion recovery, and I took it, and I just knew God was calling me to it. And so I took that, and it changed my life forever. Right, I was able to release it and let it go and know that I could bond with my children. And God gave me this gift in the middle of it. My kids walked down the stairs. They were so tiny. They were, well, I guess my two-year-old, my oldest one. And I felt something inside, and I was like, oh, my gosh, thank you, God. Like, I can feel for my kids. And so if you look at our family today, they're 10 and 12. They're great. My husband's handsome. We're, like, the cutest, and we're just the best, and I live in a cute little cul-de-sac, and everything's good. You would never know all of that, right? You would never know all of that existed. But my question to the kids is my husband stoked, my rad husband of 13 years, that I tell 12,000 students a year, if I think I see my ex-boyfriend, my heart stops? Does that feel good to him? What's the answer?
No.
No. And do you think he gets all of me emotionally? You just heard my story. Absolutely not. I'm in therapy still, right? Like, I've done a lot of prayer. But he doesn't. So choices I made from 15 to 17 affect me and my marriage, my 13-year marriage, my children. It affects. What you do now does affect your future, you know, and it's really important to know that. So we talk about game plans, okay? We talk about, I hit everything, right? I'm good. Game plans. What do you do? We're not just going to leave you with like, hey, this is all what's going on. Like, what do you do? We love these. Waiting a date. I tell them these are what kids write to us. This is what people say. This is what, you know, this waiting to date. Okay. Building friendships. Build your pyramid. Build it in groups, right? Build friendships in groups. Avoid pornography. Plain and simple. Get help if that website has a really, on our website, you can click on it, but you can just go to the website directly. Fightthenewdrug.org. There's a whole blueprint. It actually looks like a blueprint of how to talk to your kids about pornography. It says, is it a boy or girl? Do you think they've seen it? Do you think they haven't? And then it talks about how to stay calm and talk about it and get it in a way where you can have that conversation. It's there, and we have to talk about it, okay? And avoid situations where you have to say no. I say, what if you've made a decision to use your brain and say, I don't want to have sex, right? Is it smart when your parents aren't home to go in the bedroom and turn off the lights and lay down with that person? Is that smart? No. They're all like, no, it's not smart. Like, stay out of that situation. I heard something really great from a really wise woman at a pregnancy center. She's amazing. But she said, she tells her grandchildren, if you guys like each other and you've decided to not have sex, the minute that she wants to, right? Like, she's on it. It's like that day. She's like, it's going to be your first time. Because a lot of people get pregnant their very first time. It's because she's ovulating and her body knows it's ready. So that's when you get a 10-foot pole out to her grandsons, is what she says. And you stay away and you go do something else. She's like, you stay away from her. And not that it's consciously, but just that's what our bodies are made to do, right? So a lot of people, we talk to teen moms. There's about 500 in Orange County through a group called Fristers. And we talk to them. And when we get to that, we get to a slide about, can you get an STI the first time? Can you get pregnant the first time? Half of them raise their hand, 13 to 24-year-olds in our community. Teen moms, they raise their hand and they want to share. It was my first time, okay? It's very important to know that. Staying connected. Those same CDC things that talk about suicide and talk about emotional distress, those kids that are feeling that are not connected to anything. Connected to your church, connected to God, connected to an activity, connected with something. You want them connected in something that feels good to them. Get them involved in something that will really help the situation. We say find out what your talents are. It's a lot easier to find out what your talents are today than it is when you're doing dishes and have toddlers around and you are trying to figure out how to go back to school and, you know, it's making dinner at the same time, right? It's much easier now. You have time now to figure out. You were all made to do something really cool, to change something in this world. Every kid, right? And you're born here at this time, right? Do what you were made to do, right? And setting goals. It's really, really important to set goals. And we talk a lot about making dream boards and writing down your goals. If you write down a goal and throw that paper away, never look at it again, you will achieve that goal. You're more likely to achieve that goal than if you thought it or typed it. Okay? Having that. And every day, I used to talk to my old neighbor. I don't talk about this anymore, but my old neighbor, I kind of mentored her. And we just talked about what her goals were. And every day and every morning, hey, did I do something to reach that goal today? Right? Like, let's talk about it. Oh, you failed? That's okay. Like, let's start a new day. Let's look at that again. Let's keep it out in our houses and kind of help them with their goals. This is one of my favorites. Let your stance, not your circumstance, dictate your actions. Okay? And basically, that's making a stance. You can't go about life without making a decision where you want to be. You're going to let your friends influence you, and you're going to do whatever it is. You have to make a stance about everything, not just sex, drugs, alcohols, parties, friends, how you treat your parents. I tell them because I have teenagers, right? Like, how you do all these things, it's really important. So I use the example of, let's say today I watched vaping's a big deal right now, right? My daughter's offered it all the time in junior high. She's in public high school. and they're doing it in the bathroom all the time. It's all around. So I talk about vaping. So I say, let's say I watched a vaping presentation today, and it's not good for me. I decided today that I don't want to vape anymore because I go to my friend Susie's house and I vape with her. Okay? I don't have a vape, but I vape with her. But I decided today it's not good for my future. I don't want to be a test bunny. It's not good for me. I decided today I'm not going to do it. When I go to my friend's house, she offers it to me. I'm going to say, I'm okay. She's going to say, okay. But what if I watched that same presentation and I didn't make a stance? I didn't decide. I said, I could take it or leave it. Who cares? Like, whatever. I go to her house today. What do?
Vape.
I vape. And all of them say that. You vape. What do they say? There's a word. I'm trying to be cool and like say their words. And I'm like, what? What is it called? I'm like super old. But I know. They're like, yeah. They're like, that's not what it's called. I'm like, okay, well. And we didn't talk about sexting. I do want to talk about that. Okay. Sexting, taking nude photos, that's a big deal. We talk about what it's doing. You're taking who you are as a whole person, and you're making yourself a sex object. We all want to be loved as a whole person, every part of who we are, okay? If we're sending that, we're sending the message that we're only this one part of who we are, which is not true, right? So those pictures don't stay with the person often that they are sent to. I tell the kids, if they heard half the stories we've heard, you would never send it up. We had a public high school say a girl sent it to her boyfriend. Boyfriend sent it to the baseball team. The baseball team put it on the school website, a naked photo of the girl. We hear in junior high a lot that friends have to move junior highs because someone sent a nude picture. High school is hard enough without doing that, okay? So we say, before you send a photo, if you're okay with it being blown up in the school cafeteria, send it. If maybe not, don't send it. That's your check, right? Before you hit send. If you're okay with everyone seeing it, because eventually that might happen, right? And high school is hard enough without it. But we love the way that 2 Timothy 2:22 says this. Run from anything that stimulates youthful lust. Run, it says. Like, oh my gosh, right? Instead, pursue righteousness, righteous living, faithfulness, love, and peace. Enjoy the companionship of those who call on the Lord with pure hearts, which you're doing. Your kids are here and in junior high, and my daughter's at her junior high camp too. But I love it. Run, right? Like, run. Tell them whatever is feeling good, it's probably not, right, good for you. And really teaching our kids that everything God tells us, I tell this to my girls all the time, whatever God is saying in here, it's not rules to make our life hard. It's rules, or it's things to protect us. I even just heard recently about that the Bible says, you know, do not worry, do not stress. And it was on the radio, and it was cute. It was saying everything that worry and stress does to us. And it's all these medical reasons. It was like 50 things, from like simple to heart attack, right? Like, really a thing. And this lady goes, how beautiful that God tells us, don't worry and don't stress. It makes it so much more loving of him, knowing what we're going to put our bodies through, knowing how harmful it is, for him to say it to us over and over again. I think it says it 365 times in the Bible for every day of the week, right? The same thing with sex. He says it because it's harmful. And now the CDC is like, yeah, abstinence, which, hi, God said it 2,000 years ago, but now we have medical backing. So now it's no longer, oh, it's just the Bible. This is medical backing. This is what God said. You can use it as a point of why the Bible's true, right? I use it as a point of reference. Hey, medical facts, this is real. This is what God tried to warn us about, right? Doing that is very important. And sex outside will hurt a marriage, right? Bonding, all that stuff. And we do tell them this. Our promise to you is that sex isn't going anywhere. It'll be there for you for years and years with your husband or wife. It'll be there for you, okay? You don't need to mess around with it now. It's worth the wait. Like, for sure, right? And I tell the kids, I'm like, I'm with my husband. It's worth it. If I could see what I have now, if I could have fast forward, I would have never given pieces away. I had pieces given, I'd taken away, I gave pieces away. I can't give to my husband, right? It's worth it. You are worth it is what we tell them. You're worth waiting for. It is worth waiting for sure. I know it's 8:30 on the dot. These are little things that I've done a lot of parenting classes, reading books, all this stuff, but planting seeds, right? So not just telling, like demanding, right? But just planting these little like thoughts, right, along the way of, hey, well, what do you think about that? And I love your story. I have another story kind of like that, but about Johnny or whatever, Michigan, right? But a lot of asking questions, like, well, what does that mean to you, right? So my daughter came home the other day and goes, did you know it's LGBTQ community coming out day? was like, first off, my whole thing was like, what is she going to tell me right now, right? But that's okay. Like, okay. You know, like, Lord be with me. I'm like, oh, well, what does that mean to you? And she's like, oh, I have some friends that had some flags. And I was like, oh, okay. What does that mean? You know? And she's like, oh, this and this. I'm like, okay. And literally, I think she remembers that conversation. She's mentioned a couple times. That was our best conversation, Mom. I literally said, oh, okay. What does that mean? Okay. That's literally all I did, right? But it was the best conversation I've had with her, right? Everything else, yeah. So that's important. Those little, like, hey, well, what does that mean? Do you have a question about that? Or, hey, like, well, you know, do you want to talk about that? And no, you know. Yeah, early, being the role model, that's really important. Just having those open conversations. Because I do what I do, I give my kids TMI. My kids have way too much TMI. My poor kids. I know. My husband's like, your mom didn't say anything. You are, like, over here. Hopefully our kids will get it right at some point. But, like, you're blowing it with our kids. But I know. No, I don't think they think that. But I had a few other cute little ideas on there. Just ideas for junior high and high school kids because they start drifting at this age, right? Right? We all know that? Yeah? Am I the only one? No one's saying yeah. And it's making me feel a little weird. No, but they start, you know, doing that and making, I read in this great book, Queen Bees and Wannabes, actually, but making a weekly date penned in your time, right? It's a weekly date that you have with each of your kids, right? It's been really hard and I'm not the best at it, but if you show up and you are there and you just actually sit at Starbucks and read a book together or have a conversation, but setting that time to have everything else out in that time with them, they start really trusting and opening up. And the more I've been doing that, the better my relationship has been with my daughters, to be honest, because they look forward to it. It's something that we just, and it's a 1 hour, you know, like just investing in them. And another thing I read that I am queen of doing is I'm doing 1,000 things, right? Like I'm talking someone off suicide watch and doing the dishes and I'm cooking dinner and they're like, hey, Mom, this. And I was like, not now, right? But that's the time where you need to really hang up and really have that conversation, especially in high school, dropping everything, turning off the stove and listening to what they have to say because they take that as a we don't care, even though we do, right? And that starts that spiral of my parents don't care, even though parents do care. So that's really important. Faith, hope, and love. I love it. Lots of prayer, lots of what did I write in here? Instilling hope in them, right? Like just giving them just seeds of just encouragement of it's okay and you can do this. And it's going to be hard to walk out an abstinence life. I've sat on panels, sex panels, which sounds so weird. But like my story and then other stories and people who waited until they got married. And that's a hard walk. That's a hard walk, right? All your friends are doing it. You don't fit in. You have to really stay strong in that. But then their story at the end is they feel like a beautiful princess, right? There's nothing to compare to. And their stories of their sex life sounds weird. But as an adult, I'm like, sounds awesome, right? That is not my experience. But that's really cool. And it took a lot. So just walking that out with them and talking about how it makes them feel lonely maybe or how, you know, like if their friends are doing it, how it feels. So I think that's important. Lots of prayer. Everyone I've met who has amazing kids, I'm like, what's your secret? Every single time. And they're always on my knees praying. My friend just told me she'll start praying with me for my girls' future husbands. It was like my best day of my life. I know. My daughter was like, lame, best day of your life. And I was like, I'm going to start praying for your husband. Stop it. Yeah, I'm just loving on him and loving him through and knowing that God can redeem and God's good all the time.